Well, Churchill got his 30,000.
And then some. Almost 300,000. So far.
So far?
I'm staying. For the French.
Welcome to the Anglophiles podcast, where two Americans talk about British pop culture. I'm Danny.
I'm Sheldon.
And welcome. This is the very first episode of 2020.
It's crazy to think that. We've been doing our podcast for a while now.
Yeah.
We're in a new decade
it's
of our
true.
Podcast.
It's true. We survived Christmas.
We did.
That
I mean, barely. Both of us are having our own medical maladies.
It's true. But we're surviving.
We're surviving. We're coming here. We're giving you the podcast that you so crave.
So this episode is going to be interesting. Before we get into our topic, do you have any British news that you want to share?
Yeah, I've got something. I actually saw this today because I'm on a lot of different subreddits on British culture and different marketing campaigns specifically, because I'm really interested in marketing campaigns people run. And there's a great one right now for the new Dracula show.
Ooh.
It's the Stephen Moffat one. Apparently the first episode came out.
I'm
people are liking it.
Pretty excited for that.
So I'm going to show you, this is a billboard ad for Dracula. I'm going to put it in the chat. I'm sure a lot of people in England have seen this
what
or have
chat?
Heard about it. sorry, in the chat, in our Facebook page.
Okay.
I'll post it there. But take a look at this GIF for the new Dracula series.
Ooh, okay.
Basically how it works.
It's a billboard.
It's a billboard, and as the sun goes down, it just looks like a blank billboard with a bunch of stakes on it. And when the sun goes down, the lights make you see in the shadow, it's Dracula. Like, the shadow of the stakes form into him at night.
This is genius.
Brilliant marketing campaign, and it's getting shared online like wildfire, so I think people are responding well. I think it works in a time lapse like this.
It's new, and it's innovative. We don't have billboards like this.
Yeah, it's a really clever idea, and I think whoever came up with this, it's brilliant. Especially the idea that, he comes out at night, Dracula,
and
it's made of stakes. I thought that was too cool. I know it's not really British news per se, but I couldn't stop watching this.
Put that on our social media.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So I have a little bit of news.
Yeah, tell me.
So, we just came away from Christmas. We just celebrated Christmas.
Yes.
So, do you remember what we ate on our last episode?
Ooh, in the last episode of 2019. Did we have, tiny little mincemeat pies.
We had mince pies.
Not mincemeat, mince pies.
They're the same thing. I've seen them both.
I thought mincemeat actually has meat.
No. Oh, wow. So what you are saying is very relevant to my news story.
Okay.
So that is a misconception. I guess early on, in the medieval times, a mincemeat pie had meat in it.
Okay.
Over the years, it has changed and evolved. Now, a mincemeat pie is just chopped fruits, like apples, dates, figs, raisins, with some sauce, some sugar, some lemon juice, things like that, all mixed together into kind of this nice caramelized filling, and you put that in a pie, and that is a mincemeat pie.
And it's just sometimes called mince pie for sure.
Yeah, mince pie, which is confusing because in England, mince is ground beef.
Okay, it's even
more
confusing.
So, yes. Anyway, this is an article from Business Insider. An American recipe website called Spruce Eats posted a recipe. Let me just read you the headline. A recipe website has responded after going viral for using ground meat in a British mincemeat and apple tart.
No.
So, basically, this Spruce Eats website posted a recipe for mincemeat pie.
Yeah.
Saying, pie crust, mincemeat, add apples, bake.
Ooh.
The picture is a picture of a pie crust full of ground beef. No sauce or anything.
Oh, it
just
looks hideous.
Just ground beef.
And dried up apple
and
bits
topped
on top
with sliced apple. We will share this on our social media as well for anyone that wants to see it.
You shouldn't look at it, though. It'll upset you.
Somebody in England saw this and freaked out. They posted it to Twitter, and they were like, guys? And apparently everybody in England saw it and was like, what the hell? That's disgusting. So... Oh. And then it started this big war of, like, British people being like, you Americans, that's disgusting. Why would you put beef in it? And then American recipe websites getting a little, like, defensive and being like, excuse me, like, traditionally it had meat in it. And as a kind of, like, a way to, like, defend why
it's like, this website... that's not this pie.
No. So, apparently Spruce Eats, once they saw that it was going viral, that they were getting all this... all this, like, backlash, they decided to update the recipe and kind of explain what happened. And once they explained it, I kind of get it.
Was it, like, a Jennifer Aniston on Friends scenario?
So that is something that a lot of people brought up, that she makes an English
trifle,
but the pages of the cookbook were stuck together, so she put...
She includes peas and tomatoes onions, and, yeah, and ground beef.
In the trifle. So a lot of people were joking about that.
Yeah, that's immediately what I thought of.
So Spruce Eats... Great. Put out this, they updated the website and they were like, this is what happened. So basically they put the recipe together, and this is a really, it's like, it's a pretty good, recipe website. So they know what they're doing. They don't just go, oh, mincemeat, like put beef in it.
Yeah.
They wrote the recipe out to say, put mincemeat in it. It's a pie filling with mincemeat. Then they send the recipe to their photographer, who then puts it together and photographs it. It was the photographer who saw mincemeat and thought it meant ground beef. So it's kind of a little bit better, I think, than the person.
A tiny bit.
I think it's better.
But then it also worries me that cooking websites aren't actually making the food. It's just like a photographer making it.
That's
not a professional chef.
That's interesting, too.
That's
but yeah.
Weird.
So they... I think Spruce Eats did a really good job being like, basically, hey, they said, quote, this was an unfortunate, if not hilarious, mix-up by one of our photographers during a recent shoot. Anyway, now if you go to the page, it says mincemeat and apple tart, now meat free.
So, oh, that's clever.
Yeah, I think they had a really good sense of humor about it, and it probably got them a lot of, it probably got them a lot of views and clicks, so.
You know what's weird?
What?
I would really love, though, like, a ground pork and apple tart. I think that would be incredible.
See, I think that could be good. If you, I think that you
can... I think pork and apple go really well
together. I think that you can pair meat and fruit. I think it can work.
But beef...
But I think it has to work specifically when done well. And this is just an instance where... It didn't have any sauce or seasoning. It was just ground beef.
Yeah,
so,
I don't think beef goes well with fruit.
It's not going to be
good. In general.
But anyway, I thought that was...
That's something else.
Hilarious.
I'm so happy that that happened. I love mess-ups like that, especially in the age of the internet. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh no, we will never let you forget
this. You can't.
This is now your identity.
You can't. Like, that website...
You are now the blog that made that pie.
...will forever be known as the ground beef and apple pie.
And now, no matter what else they make, people will come into the restaurant requesting this bananas pie that they have never made, and people are going to want to have it.
Amazing. Gross. Well, yeah, I thought that was interesting.
That's incredible.
Do you want to introduce our topic today?
Yeah, so today we are watching an incredible movie that came out in 2017 that is based on real life events. So this is going to be an interesting topic to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the Christopher Nolan film Dunkirk.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting choice, I think, for us to do on the podcast because a lot of the stuff that we cover on here are British made shows. They're filmed in Britain by BBC or, you know, Channel 4. They have British actors. This is a little different, but it is directed by Chris Nolan.
I feel like in my mind, this is one of the most British things we've covered because of the subject matter.
It's true.
I think this is probably something that doesn't mean a lot to a lot of Americans, but I think probably you would find to a lot of English people, this story matters a lot. Like, this is a turning point.
Is Dunkirk, the whole beach evacuation, is this something that you knew about before the movie? Wow.
I didn't know how many people there were, and exactly, like, I knew a bunch of small ships came and saved people from a beach that, like, they weren't getting any evacuations. Like, up until that point, nothing happened. As far as I know, Like, basically, Germans were not letting anybody escape.
Wow.
And so every ship that came close was getting sunk.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had heard, like, a bunch of small ships. I didn't know that it was, like, a government mandate. I just knew that a bunch of them came and basically shuttled people on the beach out to the boats further at sea and just kept shuttling them.
Very cool. It's interesting how... It is very British, this movie, and I think it is interesting how... I feel like I've seen a lot of British movies about World War II. You know? Like, it's kind of... World War II... I mean, it changed the world, obviously.
Yeah.
A lot of countries. It really, really changed them. But I feel like there's so much of Britain's identity comes from World War II.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
the Keep Calm and Carry On posters were from World War II.
Well, I mean, it's... I think it... For England is a country that had an empire.
Mm-hmm.
They were ones who, like, spread out all across the world and were very successful. And I think especially the closer we are in history to now, they did not ever get battle on their home soil.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very personal because they were, like, in danger,
yeah,
like, the entire time.
And getting bombed.
Yeah, getting bombed, like... They are on the front lines with the French, whereas, like, a lot of the other countries in the world were sitting out, America included,
yeah,
not getting involved. England was always there.
Mm-hmm.
They were the leaders of the war, like,
interesting,
of people resisting.
So I pulled the Wikipedia description of the movie, so I'm just going to read it.
Yeah.
Just in case anyone listening to this. I'm sure if you're British, you have some idea, but...
We have some American listeners, too.
It's true, yeah. So, the Wikipedia description is, in May 1940, Germany advanced into France, trapping Allied troops on the beaches of Dunkirk. Under air and ground cover from British and French forces, troops were slowly and methodically evacuated from the beach using every serviceable naval and civilian vessel that could be found. At the end of this heroic mission, 330,000 French, British, Belgian, and Dutch soldiers were safely evacuated.
Yeah.
So that's what the movie is about. This is a crazy movie.
Yeah.
So we are doing it right now because we watched it at Christmas.
Which, you know, like, not everyone's choice of Christmas movie, but don't worry, we also watched Love Actually and Elf and Home Alone. We got a lot of the classic,
it's
you know,
true,
Christmas movies in.
It's true.
But then...
My dad really wanted me to watch Dunkirk.
And I had seen it,
yes,
before, and I also wanted you to watch it.
I really wanted to watch it, too, because I love Chris Nolan.
Yeah.
He's a great director. He's never made a bad movie that I know of. So I really wanted to watch this, but I really wanted to wait and watch it with my dad. So it was really cool to watch it on my parents' really big TV and watch it,
yeah,
with you and my dad and just kind of like sit there in silence. We did not talk during that movie.
It's one of those movies you can't.
You
just
sit
have
there
to watch
in
it
silence
all.
And watch it and turn up the sound and it's... And it is a ride.
Take you away.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, I think, is how he shot the movie, how it's put together, and how it's told three different stories in three different spans of time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one storyline, the Tom Hardy one,
mm-hmm,
he is in a Spitfire. My
yeah,
boys love the planes. And it takes place in 1 hour.
Wow.
And then in one day is the story of... The actual Brits, the normal villagers hopping in their fishing boat and going to the beach.
Oh, yeah, the Mark Rylance.
Mark Rylance one.
Yeah.
And then the storyline of the people on the beach is a week long.
Oof.
And it's something where I think it's... You get a little confused at first trying to, like, place together each story.
Yeah.
But I think it's expertly done the way... About three quarters of the way through... The pacing of the story is making it so much faster. Now that the stories are all coming to a head,
yeah,
like, it and the music is just driving. And I think you just, it's a sprint to the end because you know all the stories are coming to a head and you want to see, like, do they all make it? Like, even though you know the ending of the story,
mm-hmm,
it's still so tense.
Yeah. It's quite good. Do you want to talk about the cast a little bit?
Sure, yeah. I think it's got a very interesting cast.
There are a lot of well-known British actors in this.
Yeah, and most of the well-known British actors are all playing, like, old adults.
Mm.
Because something that Christopher Nolan said he really wanted, whenever he learned about the people who were fighting, like, on the beaches, they were a bunch of, like, young kids. Mm. Like, young nobodies. They weren't a lot of, like, people that were high-ranking in the military. It was a lot of grunts. And so, because of that, he wanted all of the young people to be pretty much nobodies. He's like, I don't want young, famous people. If we're gonna get some famous people, we'll make them,
And then Harry Styles was in it.
But it's interesting, a fun fact about that, Chris Nolan had no idea how famous Harry Styles was.
Really?
So he was, like, looking for people, and I don't know how, like, who suggested him first, if he was suggested from an agent or something.
Yeah.
But apparently Chris Nolan looked at a picture of his face and said, he's got a really old-fashioned face. Have him send me a tape.
Wow.
And so famous One Direction star had to literally film a tape and send it to Chris Nolan, like every other starting actor or actress.
That's cool.
And he got the role.
That's,
like,
really cool.
So it's not stunt casting. It's not like, hey, let's get this One Direction kid to get, like, teenagers watching the movie. I don't think Chris Nolan had any idea he was as famous as he was.
He does really have an old-fashioned face. Like, I was going to say, Harry Styles does a very good job in this movie. I think it surprised a lot of people.
I think so.
I think part of it is that he looks like he belongs in that time period.
Yeah.
So
his hair is perfect.
I have a question.
Yeah.
This is a dumb question. Is Harry Styles American or British?
No, he's British.
He's British?
Yeah.
Is One Direction British?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, One Direction.
I never knew that.
This is also going to blow your mind.
I've never heard them talk.
One Direction is made up of people who all auditioned on The X Factor, and they were formed together to make a supergroup.
What?
They were all people who auditioned solo for X Factor.
And they made a boy band.
And they made a boy band of just, like, young, hot kids who are pretty good at singing, but not, like, enough on their own to go solo.
Wow.
And now several of them are going solo.
True.
I'm sure people are going to correct me and say that's not exactly the story, but as far as I know, that's what happened.
I thought Harry Styles was great.
I thought he was great in this. I mean, as you mentioned, the aforementioned, Mark Rylance, so good
Mark
in this
Mark Rylance
movie.
Is so good. What a treasure.
Oh, so is Tom Hardy, just acting with his eyes.
Tom Hardy's really good. I remember, so audiences love Tom Hardy. Everybody loves Tom
Hardy.
How
do you not love Tom Hardy?
He's great. So I remember when this movie came out, people being like, okay, well, just prepare yourself. Tom Hardy's role isn't that big. But, like, it's interesting that people were like, just don't get your hopes up about how you're not going to see that much of Tom Hardy or his face.
But, like... He is the main character in his plot line.
Mm-hmm.
That whole plot line is just him. So I would argue he's got a great role.
He did a great job. I think he has a hard job in this, you know?
Like, anytime you have to act and it can't be acting off of somebody, it's just you in, like, a closed-in box.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not doing a lot with your body and he's still delivering.
Yeah.
So good. You also have Sir Kenneth Branagh.
Yep.
As the commander, and James Darcy as a colonel.
Oh, I love James Darcy.
He was great.
He's
in this.
So good.
And then we haven't mentioned Cillian Murphy.
Cillian Murphy's in it.
Oh.
His character doesn't even have a name.
Yeah, it's really upsetting.
I kind of want to talk about, like, one of the main kids.
Which one?
It says that he plays Tommy. It's, I don't know how you pronounce.
Fionn?
I would say Fionn.
Fionn?
Fionn Whitehead, but I'm just guessing. It sounds like an Irish name. But,
He is, like, the main kid.
He also, like Harry Styles, fits into the time period extremely well. And I think he did a really good job, because, the movie follows him for quite a bit.
Yeah.
Kind of like his, like, attempt
his story
over and over again of trying to get on the boat. And
he just wants to get out of there.
Yeah. So he does a really good job.
And it's so upsetting. Like, every single twist and turn of his story, he meets more and more people. Like, it starts off with the group of people he's with all getting shot. And he just has to run.
Yeah.
And then he gets to the beach and he's trying to, like, get on, and the boat he tries to get on sinks. And then he goes and hides in another boat and it gets shot up and it sinks. Like, I think it sucks. Everything he tries to do, he almost has salvation,
yeah.
and he keeps getting thrust back onto the shore.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because, so here's something that I was a little confused about when we were watching it, but it's such a tense movie, I didn't want to talk. When he and the soldier, who, spoiler alert, turns out to be French
guy.
He's pretending to be British.
Oh, heartbreaking.
When they get the stretcher with the guy on it.
Yeah.
Was that a dead guy?
Yeah.
They were trying
it was somebody that was on the beach, either dead or dying.
Okay. And they were like, we'll get, So they were basically using this guy to get onto the boat. Okay.
They were not part of the medical infantry.
I had, like, all throughout this movie, I had mixed feelings about what they were trying to do. Yeah. Because part of me was like, no, guys, you gotta get in line, and you gotta wait. But then part of me was like, shit, like, what would I do?
Yeah.
Would I sit there in a line and wait to get killed, or would I kind of, like, break the rules? And
if it's a manner of life or death, like... I know we talked about it as it was happening. Like, the British love queuing.
Yes,
so many people are just standing on the beach in perfect queues.
That's what I was
going to
say. Every single time. I'm getting too excited. But yes, every time they would show the long lines of the guys waiting, I was like, those goddamn Brits.
They're perfect.
They know how to queue in a way that Americans do not get.
No, in the midst of, like, perfect danger, everyone is just politely in line. They're all just standing, knowing these votes will come, and if they don't, I will still stand here until I die. Like, as Americans, they all would have been elbowing each other off that bridge.
They would have torn each other apart.
Yeah, I think the Americans would have been self-destructing, and the bridge would have been destroyed. They would have capsized every boat that would try to come. Mm. It would have been a bad deal.
There is something to say for British politeness.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting is I read earlier today, I have not looked at a lot of behind the scenes stuff about this movie, but I read that in some of the shots where it's just the long lines of guys, they had they had cardboard cutouts of soldiers. So I read that and I was thinking individual standees. I was like, how does that work? Does the wind knock them down? Like, how do you shoot that with them not falling over? Like, what's happening there? And I saw a picture of it, and it looks like they would have a cardboard cutout of, like, 10 soldiers standing in a line, and then they would have, like, a real guy stand there, and, like, two guys holding the end of it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, that's brilliant. So much cheaper than more extras,
and
it looks so much better than digitally putting in people standing there. So
sorry, say it again because I coughed.
And it looks so much better than digitally inserting people standing there. So
yeah,
that's just genius filmmaking.
And we've talked about this before. I don't know if on our podcast or just like in person, but Christopher Nolan loves doing practical effects.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as much as he can, he avoids anything where he has to lean on CG and wants to do as much practically as possible.
Because it looks so good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is why another thing in this movie, obviously they didn't actually have a Spitfire with its propeller off flying through the air. That would have been dangerous.
Only other thing I saw was a model. It was like an RC model of a Spitfire with a teeny tiny little Tom Hardy in it.
Yeah. But it's based on a real story.
That's amazing.
Of, like, the Spitfires, the way they were designed. I mean, they have an incredible design from, like, the wings to the way that they were the first planes that put the rivets, like, inside so close down that they got, like, no wind resistance traction. So it really helped them go fast.
Wow.
And, like, they could do so much on these planes. They're, like, the way that you look at cars in the Fast and Furious having, like, a little NOS boost,
mm-hmm.
the planes had that. The Spitfires could, like, boost an extra, like, 30 miles an hour, I think.
Wow.
But one of the way they were designed is, like, so that they could really perfectly float in air.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a story of somebody, like, his engine failed, and he floated for, like, miles and miles and
just
miles.
Just glided. Wow.
And so I know that
that's... That was an amazing shot.
That is where, like, I tear up every time, knowing the guy is like, yeah, I'm going to be captured. This is the end for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got to guard my beach. I've got to guard these men.
Yeah.
Like, I think the second his other two members of his flight formation, like, had to peter off, and it was just him going for the beach, I think he knows, this is where I end.
Yeah.
This is where I'm going.
Yeah.
And, ooh, it's so, like, what a decision.
Mm-hmm.
To have to be that person, and especially because, you know, like, the other pilot gets kind of shit on at the end whenever they get up there on the beach, and they're like, where were you?
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Rylance says, these men know where you were.
Mm-hmm.
It's, people always want to blame somebody else, like, no matter how much good you do, no matter who you save, it's never good enough,
mm-hmm.
because there's somebody else out there that didn't make it.
True.
And I think that's why this story is so amazing, that the British government only were expecting, like, if we can get 25,000 people back, 40,000 soldiers, then we can continue this war.
And I think
and
they ended up getting so many people that there were only like 30,000 that they didn't get, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
And a lot of the people they didn't get were like, we're probably never going to make it. We're wow. like wounded or were willing to stay and fight to the death. Like
wow.
it, they got almost everyone that they could get.
So,
and it was, like, they even, they said it in the movie, 300,000, but it's more than that. It's, like, 338,000 people.
Wow. That's amazing.
It's incredible, and a testament to humanity. Just these everyday, average people hearing, your country needs you, these soldiers need you, go get them. And people just saying yes, not questioning, saying, like, yeah, I'm gonna drop everything and go into war.
Yeah.
Even though you're not trained for it, like, you could die. And just knowing they have to do it.
I really like Beautiful. The storyline of Mark Rylance, his character, who's like retired Navy, who takes his own boat, and his son, was that his son?
Yeah.
He takes his son,
youngest son.
And they decide to just take their own boat before it gets commandeered,
yeah.
and just get out
right,
there,
well,
take life vests, pick up as many guys as they can. And it's so interesting that on their way to do that, they pick up a stranded soldier
mm-hmm.
who's just escaped the
yeah.
beach, and
he doesn't.
That's a huge
back.
Complication to their plan to get to the beach, is that he's like, I don't want to go back. I can't go back. I just got away from. Which I totally get why he would be like. Like he
yeah.
clearly has
made
PTSD.
It out. He escaped.
Yeah. So that is a really good storyline. But that's his whole thing, is that he's like, we can't not we have to go.
And I love that, like, they're showing that storyline, and that's on the one day. It's all happening on this
mm-hmm.
one day. And then whenever it cuts back later on to the 1 week storyline, and you see Cillian Murphy boarding that boat, and he's with a bunch of people, and you just know in that moment, everyone else here dies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but him.
Because he was the only one.
Yep. And it, like, hits even harder once you just see that for a split second, and it doesn't spell it out for you. It just kind of lets you know, like, yeah, remember seeing him? This
yeah.
is on different days, remember? And you just, you feel it in your heart, like, the gravity of the situation.
Mm.
How they're just stuck on a beach.
It's... They,
pinned in.
Christopher Nolan does a really good job of also reminding you that the Germans are closing in to
yeah.
the beach. That everyone who's there is... very much in danger.
Yeah.
And there's, like, Germans coming and bombing them from their planes.
And the French are holding them off the best they can.
I was reading something about this movie earlier that was talking about how it's a simple story, but at the same time, it's not.
Yeah.
Because Christopher Nolan really had to go and show what was happening on land, what was happening
mm-hmm.
on sea, and what was happening in the air. And that's a lot.
He didn't, originally, he didn't even want to do a script.
Damn.
He knew the scenes he wanted to show, and he knew these moments, and his wife talked him into actually writing a script. She said, you have to write this down. You're crazy. And he was like, all right, fine, I'll listen to
He's
you.
He's a mad bastard.
Yeah, but I like that he finally listened to her. I was like, okay. And I think we'd also be remiss if we didn't give major props to Hans Zimmer for an incredible score.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone that worked in the editing, the sound editing, and the music mixing department, like, they won Oscars for all of those categories, for sound mixing, sound editing, and film editing. And it shows. Like, it's incredibly well put together. It's
mm-hmm.
so tense in the way everything builds. Every sound matters. Whenever they're stuck inside of a ship, and one gunshot goes out, like, you feel it. You flinch with them.
Yeah.
And you're terrified. You know anyone could die right now.
Mm-hmm.
The technical team on this movie is incredible.
I was looking at some behind-the-scenes photos from production. Not behind-the-scenes, just production photos. And they were filming the scene where Tom Hardy's other pilot, I
yeah.
forget the character's name, he gets shot down, and he is in the water, or he at least lands. He does a water
yes.
landing, and then as his plane starts to sink, his cockpit won't open.
Yes,
so he's
jammed.
Stuck in there, and he's, like, hitting at the window. He's trying to... So I saw how they were filming that. It
so
was
claustrophobic.
It looks like it's in the middle of the ocean. They filmed it in a pool. But there was this great shot of... everyone, like, boom operator, camera guys, like, Christopher Nolan, everyone is neck deep in water. Christopher Nolan's wearing goggles and a snorkel, and he's directing,
oh my God.
He's directing this shot, this scene, while he's neck deep in water. It was...
That's incredible.
And then there was another shot, too, where they were filming some of Tom Hardy's stuff, And there was this huge wheel that they had built around the plane to kind of hold the camera so they could move the camera and move the plane. And there's a guy on one side who's, like, holding onto the wheel and, like, pulling it. And then on the other side of the wheel is Christopher Nolan moving it. It's like he could just stand by and direct the shot, but he's like, no, I got
to
get my hands on this.
He has to be in
on it. I got to, like, I have a vision. I think that's so cool.
Yeah, he's an incredible filmmaker. One of the best living ones right now. He's
so good.
He's insanely talented.
Do you want to take a quick snack break?
I would love to.
Okay.
We will take it in 1 minute. No, I don't want that story. I want the 1 second story. Let's have it then.
Let's do a snack break in a week.
Aww.
Okay, we'll do it right now.
We are now inside of the snack break.
Yes.
And you have put a plate in front of us that has a sandwich on it.
So this is the part of the podcast where we try a British food.
Yes.
Either something we buy or something we make.
Sometimes something that is sent to us.
This is a bit of both. So I thought we're doing kind of a movie about a classic British, like a true story from history. And I thought, I don't want to just do, like, a modern candy bar. Like, maybe let's do something a little older.
Yeah.
I honestly don't
know. Plus, coming out of Christmas, we've eaten so much candy.
We've had
too
many biscuits. So this is something that I've heard about a lot in British cuisine.
But you've never had it.
I've never had it.
Okay.
This is a cheese and pickle sandwich.
Cheese and pickle.
Which two Americans... You may think of a dill pickle.
Sure do.
Which is a pickled cucumber. Brined.
Mm-hmm.
That is not what this is.
Little slice of a Kraft single.
Yeah. So that's not what this is.
Okay.
This is a cheddar and Branston pickle sandwich.
What is a Branston pickle?
So Branston pickle, when I first went to England, I ordered a Plowman's Lunch. Do you know about that?
I've heard of it. I don't know what it is.
Plowman's Lunch is one of my favorite things to get. They bring you a plate. It's got like... It's different sometimes because they can kind of do their own thing, but it's usually like a chunk of bread, a hard-boiled egg, a couple wedges of cheese, some other things, maybe like a slice of ham. It's kind of like a cold little tray of like food.
Hmm.
Anyway, so usually they come with Branston pickle, which I thought was a pickle.
Was a pickle?
No, it is like a pickled onion chutney.
Okay.
So, this is a pickled onion chutney and cheddar cheese.
I think I might like this.
Sandwich. I think that you might. So, I'm going to give you a slice.
All right.
And I'm going to eat a slice. No. So, Branston pickle is pretty popular in England. I brought the jar over here so you can see it. It's very popular in England. I don't know if you remember this, but when we watched Bridget Jones' Diary, there's a scene where she's standing by the window, just looking out the window, and she's eating Branston pickle out of the jar.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So
I didn't see that, but I did talk about Bridget Jones' Diary to one of the secretaries at work today, one of our office managers, and that was kind of fun. All right, I'm going to try this.
Take a bite.
Okay. There's both a lot going on and not a lot going on here. Like, I'm all for sandwiches that aren't too complex, but this needs a little something else to me. Like, I think it's good. I think the cheese goes well with this, like, onion chutney, this pickled onion chutney.
I like this.
I like it.
I think it's, like, you know me, I am not a pickle fan. You know me, I am not an onion fan.
That's true.
However, I really like the flavor of the Branston pickle. I just think it's like, tangy. It's sweet. It's kind of, not sour. It's like tart
bit.
And then it's soft. And then, yeah, paired with the cheese, I think it's really, really good.
Do people tend to eat this like in a whole sandwich like this? Or do they do it little like finger sandwiches?
I looked up pictures and it looks like two slices of white bread, sliced cheddar, and Branston pickle spread on it.
Okay.
And it looks like you can kind of do as much Branston pickle as you want. So, yeah, it's interesting. I think it is a really good combo.
Huh.
I think the cheese and the Branston pickle together work very well. I am a big fan of this.
I like it. I think I still wish there'd be something else there, like put a little thinly sliced chicken in there with that. I think that would be really good. give me a bit of protein.
Mm.
I think maybe an egg, I think, would be good with that.
I think for kind of a simple sandwich, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Okay, so I just Googled the cheese and pickle sandwich. On Wikipedia, it looks like you can also put bread or margarine on the slices of bread before you do the cheese and the bread and pickle.
Okay.
That might have been good, because eating this...
It was a bit dry.
The cheese side, like if the cheese wasn't sticking to the bread, if there had been just a little bit of butter, it might have stuck. Yeah. It looks like you can also put salad items such as lettuce and rocket or arugula onto it as well.
So I think that would be good.
You get a little bit of greens, and yeah, the lettuce would kind of give you a crunch. So I think you would probably like that.
Yeah, that would be tasty.
Anyway, the last thing in this Wikipedia page says, Sean Poulter of the Daily Mail described the sandwich as quintessentially British.
Whoa.
So yeah, it's very popular in England. Well, that was really good. Surprisingly good. I can see myself eating this again.
Yeah, I would make one of those.
It's so tangy. I'm a fan. All right, well, do you want to get back to our topic?
Yeah, let's talk some more about Dunkirk.
Woo! So what do you think are the best parts of this movie?
It's hard to say, just because it's all so good and so well done. The most heartbreaking storyline to me is the kid who just wants to help out and doesn't fully realize what he's doing and ends up getting knocked down the stairs by Cillian Murphy and goes blind and passes away.
The kid that jumped onto Mark Rylance's boat?
Yeah.
I think they were just having him untie from the dock, and then right as they go to take off, he jumps in.
And he always mentions...
He was like, we're going to war.
And he just kind of shrugs.
Yeah.
Because he mentioned that he's not good at anything. His dad always thought he was kind of going to be a failure and never going to amount to anything.
Yeah.
And so, at the very end, Mark Rylance's son made sure, they put it in the paper,
yeah,
that he died, like, rescuing people.
I do really
That really teared me up.
I like that storyline, too, because I like how Cillian Murphy's character is going crazy, and they kind of, like, have to lock him in, and he's going crazy because he's like, I'm not going back there, and then the son keeps saying, like, I can't believe he's being like this. Like, this is terrible. And Mark Rylance is just kind of calm about it. And he's like, not himself.
Yeah.
Because, like, we didn't have PTSD back then. Like, we didn't have a name. I mean, we had it. We didn't have a name for it.
And I mean,
there was an understanding of, like, a soldier has seen some shit. And so he isn't being himself.
Yeah, we've called it different things throughout history. Like, people getting the terrors, the jitters, stuff from war.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's so far removed from emotion, just to call it, like, post-traumatic stress disorder. It used to be shell-shocked based on literally, like, being so close and hearing shells. Like, that's around this time, yeah.
It's very sad. But I do love that when he asks about the kid, they don't tell him, like, hey, this kid died because you accidentally knocked him down. They don't tell him.
What maturity from that young man to say that.
Because he was being very spiteful to the guy, but I think that he...
He realized it wasn't going to help. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't... Knowing that wouldn't make it him any less dead.
Yeah. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that... I think... I really love that plot line.
Do you remember when Paul Stevenson, our longtime listener and often writer in...
Yes.
mentioned to us that the character that Mark Rylance is playing was the guy on the Titanic. He was one of the officers that was in charge of, like, making sure people were getting onto the boat safely. I think that's really, really interesting.
I also, that reminds me, speaking of Titanic, just like the people who went down with the ship, I love Kenneth Branagh at the very end, when it seems like almost everybody is off the beach. He's like, well, I'm staying here for the French.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
It's a little problematic because the French and everyone else got off at the same time, and they make it kind of seem like only the British came first and then they worried about other people.
Yeah.
Which isn't how it happened, but I like the sentiment of him being like, I'm staying
until... They were helping us.
I'm staying until everyone is off this beach.
Yeah.
And just that moment from somebody that you... I think you know to respect people in the military that are so highly ranking, but usually you don't see them as having that kind of a wherewithal to understand what their job is in war.
Yeah.
A lot of times you see them in a stuffy war room making decisions from behind a desk.
Yeah, yeah. And sending people to the front line.
Yeah. To see somebody out there and knowing that, like, this is my job. My job is to make sure people survive.
Yeah. Speaking of Titanic, there was something that in my adult life, I've only seen, and I see a lot of war movies, I see a lot of action movies, I watch a lot of historical movies.
Yeah.
But there is something that, a feeling that Dunkirk gave me that I've only ever gotten from one other movie, and it was Titanic.
Whoa.
And it was both, for both movies, it was kind of a little past the midway point of the movie, where you were just showing a very long sequence of people struggling to survive.
Whoa.
In Titanic, it's when the boat is tilting and turning and people are sliding down the deck and screaming. Horrifying. Screaming and holding on to things. And then it happened beautiful. In Dunkirk, too, when one of the boats gets torpedoed and it's turning on its side and all these men are just like
sinking.
Screaming and like scrambling for their lives. And like both times, I just got this image of like, this is hell. Yeah. This is what hell is. Hell, it may not be, you know, a boat in the ocean of British soldiers, but like it is people screaming in fear and in terror, and it's never ending. It goes on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think honestly, drowning would be like the worst way to go. I would just watching all the people trapped on a boat.
It's not ideal.
And the only reason that Finn gets off is because he had watched for the door earlier,
mm-hmm.
and luckily his French friend saved them.
I do like that he opened the door. I like that he
didn't have
stayed
to.
Outside the boat because he was like,
I don't trust that.
Yeah, that kid had really good instincts.
And then he ended up sacrificing himself later.
So I don't think that he did. I think when they were like, guys, we gotta bail, everybody get out, he didn't understand what they were saying.
Well, but Harry Styles, like, hit him and said, like, hey, let's go.
It's true.
But
and then he started to go.
I think, but he still sat there and stayed. When people were leaving, he was still staying, holding poles. I think it was his way of showing to everybody else,
I would like to rewatch it, because I saw it as he just didn't know.
See, I saw it on the rewatch. It's basically right after they call him out, and they're like, who are you? You're just here because you want us to like get you off the shore, like out of this. You're a coward. And I think it's him showing, I'm not a coward. Like, I will, I can plug these holes like the rest of you. I'm not just here to escape.
I do really
and I thought
like
it was him laying down.
That Harry Styles' character had the sense to sense that he wasn't British, you know? He was like, you haven't said a damn word. What are you, German? And then he speaks finally, and you're like, oh, he's French.
Yeah.
But I thought that was really interesting, too, that he noticed. He was like, why aren't you talking? There's got to be a reason.
And I love the psychology of humans in that situation, where you think one person not being on the ship is going to make you light enough to survive, even though it's got a dozen holes in it.
Yeah.
And then you just have to, people turn on the outsider, the person that's not like them.
Yeah.
And it's horrifying, but fascinating.
Yeah.
And luckily, Finn is there to talk sense into them, to be like, one person's not making a difference. Like, we have to plug these holes. The ship is going down.
I do like that. That character is called Tommy. I don't know
if we
ever learn that that's his name, or if he's just kind of representative.
I think we don't learn a lot of their names.
I think he's kind of representative of, like, they would call all the soldiers Tommies.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's what that's supposed to be. But I like that he kind of stands up for that kid.
Yeah, I do too. Like, I think they're always together from the beginning.
It's a bold stance, because everybody's turning on him, and it takes a lot of courage to be like, hey, no, like, stop, no.
Yeah, it's...
Don't do anything to him.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of fun facts. I mean,
ooh.
And I say that with a caveat. Like, obviously, we are discussing, like, a real-life event that is not fun.
Real people died.
Real people died. We understand the severity of this. But I think also Chris Nolan did as well, and they shot this on Dunkirk Beach.
I saw
this movie is shot in the exact location where it happened.
How eerie would you be if you were one of the extras?
And
to be standing there... And just, like, knowing you were standing where they were.
And apparently they invited a lot of veterans who survived Dunkirk to come. Not to watch the filming of it, but to the premiere.
Wow.
And I think they said they invited 30 veterans or something. Yeah. Kenneth Branagh spoke to them afterwards.
Mm.
And the consensus was that they were like, it's very accurate. This is how it felt. They're like, the movie was louder, though. I love it that they were like, the movie's louder than how it was on the beach. Everything's spot on except for that.
Oh my god, that's really funny. So Chris... Well, because they're really old too, so they probably don't like loud noises.
Right, but I love the idea too that Hans Zimmer just cranked it too much for these old people that are like, war was quieter than you, Hans Zimmer.
That's really cool.
Yeah, another thing that's really cool, I mean, I think Chris Nolan really focuses on realism, had, like, multiple cockpits that they would use, one that is functional and one is non-functional. Like you said, he had cameramen floating in the water with the actors.
Wow.
And he shot almost everything with IMAX cameras. Most everything in here is made for IMAX. And where... that Spitfire, the one that you were talking about, like, that scene where they go crash in the water and all of the people are there and they're up to their noses in the boom mic. Apparently, when they were filming it, the plane with the camera in it sank quicker than they predicted, and it took them way longer to retrieve the plane than they thought. And so, like, the whole IMAX camera was filled with water. Like... It was supposed to be long enough down there that they could get it in time, the IMAX would be dry, but it was...
Did they wreck it?
Well, that's the thing, like, if this very expensive camera is completely covered in water, obviously it's probably ruined, but Chris Nolan knew there's, like, an old, old movie technique of keeping film wet. And so, basically, they shipped it back to Los Angeles from England in a box of water to keep it wet. And that's the cut they use in the movie.
What?
Yeah. So basically, Chris Nolan, like we were saying, knows so much about film that he's like, all right, this is probably destroyed, but I've got an idea.
That?
Put it in a box of water and ship it to LA.
He's crazy.
He's crazy, and I love it. Like, that's baffling to me that he had the wherewithal just to be like, no, this will be fine. We're going to do this. It'll be okay.
Wow.
Also, in a sad note, I mean, like I mentioned, the veteran said that this was all too real, that so much of it felt real, and there's a scene that a lot of people watching it are very upset by. I mean, several scenes, but one scene in particular, people are like, there's no way that happened, like, the guy that just walks into the ocean.
Yes. So when we saw the movie, I got the idea that that guy was like, well, I'm just going to kill myself and walked into the ocean. But today I was reading a little bit about Dunkirk and I read that there were guys on the beach that watched men just try to swim the channel.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
They would rather basically die trying to get to England than stand on a beach hoping to get there.
Yeah.
And so I think they knew they're swimming to their deaths.
Yeah.
But maybe you never like...
It's true. That hope can carry you a little ways. Wow. Oof. That is really sad.
It's really sad, really upsetting.
It's powerful, though.
It really is.
It's a powerful movie.
Yeah. It's an incredible movie. I think it does a very good job of capturing both, like, the horror and the kindness that comes from war. I mean, no kindness comes from destruction, but that people would risk their lives, their everything, for people that are risking it all.
Yeah.
It's an incredible movie.
Hmm.
How British is it?
I think it's a really British movie for many reasons. The director, it's a British story. All the actors are British.
They're not glorifying war in any way, like an American movie
would. But I also love when they get Cillian Murphy and, like, all the other guys, they save them and bring them on the boat, Mark Rylance's boat, and then they're like, all right, tea anyone?
Yep.
So,
yeah, that is so British.
Yeah, but it is also, like, the moment that Kenneth Branagh's character sees, like, all the civilians with their boats, the fishing boats, you know, like, private...
Some of them coming up.
Private boats, yeah, like, just all the,
there
like
are over 700 boats.
British came. Civilians just rolling up, being like, hey, I'm rolling into war right now. I don't want to, but I gotta save our guys.
I can probably only fit 8 of you
that
to jump in.
That is very British, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, to, like, go in and do the thing that's the right thing.
Yeah, just because nobody else will, so you have to.
Mm-hmm.
You must.
Yep.
Yeah.
Man.
Because, some things are bigger than you.
Who do you
think should watch this movie? I know we always ask that.
So, I remember when this came out, some people really loved it, and I remember hearing some people didn't love it.
Ooh, I can't imagine.
But I think almost anyone can watch this.
I think anyone should watch this.
That is a very good point. Could, yes, but should, absolutely yes. Mm-hmm.
I think it is a very powerful movie, and it is a very important movie.
Mm-hmm. True.
And extremely well-made. Like I mentioned, it's so technically well-made, from Nolan to the actors to all of the editors. Like, from start to finish, this movie is an A+.
Yeah. So good. Wow. Yeah, I'm sure we have not really... I'm sure there's stuff we...
There's so much to jump into.
That we forgot to cover. Touched.
Just, if, like, how badass Tom Hardy is in the air.
if we missed anything...
How beautiful the Spitfires
feel
are.
Feel free to email us, anglophilespodcast@gmail.com. That's files with an F. Are you ready to guess your British word?
Yeah, I mean, it's a heavy topic, so I need to build myself back up. I'm opening the mental Rolodex. All right. I'm rifling through all the British slang.
Okay. This is a phrase, not a word.
Okay, okay.
The phrase, the British phrase, is all mouth and no trousers. So, what do you think that means?
All mouth and no trousers.
Yeah.
Okay. So, trousers are pants for Americans, but pants for British people are underwear. Yeah. So, that alone is confusing multiple audiences. Okay, so... All mouth and no trousers.
Yes.
Makes me think, it's a guy that talks so much, he's trying to distract you from everything else. It's like the opposite of the Emperor's New Clothes, where he thinks he's got the greatest clothes and he doesn't.
Okay.
This is a guy who knows what he doesn't have, and he's just trying to talk, he's swindling you around it. But all mouth and no trousers, you can't trust a man like that. Because, like, you gotta look and see if he's wearing pants. You can't trust a man that's not wearing pants.
I mean, fair.
It's true.
Wow.
But if somebody's, like, swindling you and sweet-talking you, you gotta think of the pants.
You don't even notice that they're pantless.
You don't even notice.
Wow.
Because you're, like, hook, line, and sinker. You're like, I'm in. You know what? This guy, I like the way he talks. I like the things he says about me. But you gotta look for the pants.
I feel like you've been swindled by a man with no pants.
Hey, you know, we don't have a lot of time in this podcast, so what does it really mean?
Well, that was incorrect, but delightful. The real meaning of all mouth and no trousers is somebody who talks a big talk, acts like they're tough, will, like, say they're gonna fight you, but will never do that.
Oh, they won't fight?
Yeah, they'll just never, they don't have what they talk about. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
No trousers. So it was pretty close. I think I got it.
A little bit.
I think I'm more correct than incorrect on this one.
Maybe.
It's the power of the pickle is coming through, and I'm feeling real street, bro.
I like that Branston pickle.
Yeah, bro.
I think I'm going to make another cheese and pickle sandwich after
right now?
This. Yeah.
Yeah, you keep looking at the plate.
And then I kind of want to watch Dunkirk again.
Oh, okay.
It's a long one.
No, I think we have to watch The Circle.
So good. Oh, yeah.
By the way, you guys, I just heard about The Circle, and I'm sure all you Brits are, like, either rolling your eyes or very excited, and don't worry, I'm going to force Danny to watch.
Wow.
Because it just came to Netflix for America.
I don't love reality shows.
I do.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll watch it with you. Okay, well, thank you everyone for joining us. You can find us on Instagram, Anglophiles Podcast, files with an F. We're also on Facebook, and you can email us.
Yeah, please reach out to us and let us know if there are any other movies that you think are important for British history, movies based on real stories. Like,
I would love to get a little more into British history.
Yeah. And I think I'm sure there are a lot of movies, especially ones that are before our time, really, of consuming film,
mm-hmm.
that may be very accurate, and you all probably watch a lot more than us, and we would love to check them out.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks again, everyone. Join us next time. Keep calm and carry on.